In this 60th reel of Seal of the Movies, the boys head back in time to revive the thriller Seven, starring Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, and perhaps the creepiest performance ever by Kevin Spacey. They head to the theater to check out Transformers Dark of the Moon. If nothing else, just to see if Jeff will actually orgasm in the theater. Finally, they check out the trailer for the upcoming thriller, Straw Dogs, starring the dreamy Alexander Sarsgaard, otherwise known as Eric from True Blood. They hit up the movie news to talk about new stuff from Paramount, The Man of Steel, Transformers' record-breaking IMAX performance, as well as Ridley Scott's upcoming Prometheus. This is definitely an episode you don't want to miss. Oh, and by the way, what's in the box? No, really, what's in the box? What's in the box?
The past.
You're telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. And I forgot to make myself a drink, but that's okay. We've got a fantastic show for you, I have to say, in my humble little opinion. And I would like to introduce my crazy co-host, Steve. How you guys doing?
I'm doing all right.
I'm crazy.
Crazy. I'm okay. Wow.
Crazy.
I do have to say, I think we have a really great show up. But let's start off with the news.
News on the mark.
Paramount decides to join the action in the animation world.
Yeah, they've officially announced that they're going to start up their own little animation studio. And forgive me, but I didn't realize they didn't have their own animation studio. But well, there's one part of this that, and the whole reason why I posted it. But anyway, they said that they're going to do budgets up to $100 million per film. I like how they put a cap on that. Like, oh, we're only going to do $100 million at the most. Like, can't be 101. 102, no, 100 million.
Only 100 million, which means we can't do crap. Actually, how much does an average Pixar film cost?
I have no clue.
Because if an average Pixar film costs like 50 million or less,
well, let me see.
I mean, then that's no big deal. It's just making sure that they don't go out of hand because they know that we can make less than that.
Right. Let's see. WALL-E estimated the budget was $180 million.
Never mind. Well, there goes that theory.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So they're basically going to shoot themselves in the foot. So they'll probably do the well. No, and it's supposed
so.
To be Iron
but
Man.
here's the funny thing. Get this. This is the whole reason why I put this on here because it's so sort. It's sort of they make this sound nice, but it's sort of kind of crappy. It says Paramount's animation mandate will be the development of the broadest range of family CGI animated films, with a key piece being titles under the label of Viacom's Nickelodeon, the number one entertainment brand for kids worldwide. Paramount will also look to build on Viacom's already thriving global consumer products business, now get this, by seeking to capitalize on merchandising opportunities tied to all Paramount Animation releases. So they're basically telling you in that little sentence there that they're going to be doing this to make money off of merchandising.
Transformers, G.I. Joe.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. My Little Pony. I mean, that's basically what Transformers is. The only thing
but
is...
Hey,
the recent Transformers G.I. Joe, they're just trying to make it serious.
Kudos to them for just coming right out and saying, hey, we're doing this because we're going to make money on all the crap
we're going
to
market
sell your kids.
The only thing is they're probably not going to make money. Mm-hmm. They may make money in the fact that, yeah, there's going to be a bunch of kids that are going to go see this. So there's going to be a lot of tickets, probably matinees mostly, and kid ticket sales. But probably not as much as if they increased the budget a little and tried to make a good movie. They're not going to make good movies. They're going to make crap movies that are just entertaining to kids.
Right.
And I mean, even, and don't get me wrong, I'm one just for one brainless, mindless, movie. We'll talk about later. that I would really love on that. I mean, I liked Wing Commander, for Christ's sakes. See what I mean? See what I mean? But I think Paramount's going to, if anything, they'll probably try this out. They'll probably do a couple test movies, but then eventually they're going to be like, you know, we're going to have to increase the budget for some of these if we're really going to want to make money on this.
Well, what I was just looking back just to see, of the recent Pixars, they were all about 200 million approximates. Toy Story, however, was about $30 million.
That was the first Toy Story, not Toy Story 3, of course.
Yeah, Toy Story 1 was about $30 million, where Toy Story 3 was about $200 million.
How about Toy Story 2?
I can look that up. Just seeing how things have grown.
Assuming averaged out, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like either just below 100 or just above 100.
Like adjusted for inflation, what is it?
Yeah, exactly. About $90 million for Toy Story 2.
See, I was right. Just below 100 million. So
let's see, just out of curiosity, let's see what Incredibles was.
Well, I'm going to actually assume that means that they would not be having any animated pictures in 3D, because I'm assuming that's one of the reasons why you go from 90 million to 200 and some million.
Yeah, Incredibles was about 92 million. Yeah. And just out of curiosity, looking around. What was this is for Shrek, just out of curiosity.
Okay, get to a different
Different company. Shrek 4 was about 165 million. And the original Shrek was Give it to me. All right. The original Shrek, about 60 million. So, you know, if that gives any kind of indication,
One last one I'd like you to look up, though.
Yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon. Let's put this under the barometer. That was a pun, by the way.
How to Train Your Dragon. Well, okay, that's a super much more recent one.
165.
Yeah.
165?
Yep.
So assuming that that was also in 3D, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So assuming, I don't think they're going to be doing any 3D pictures. I think 3D is what's pushing everything at least over 100 million, if not more. So everything they're going to do is 2D, so they're not jumping on the bag wagon.
I just wouldn't think that the development cost of an animated 3D movie would be that much more.
Well, look at the numbers.
I'm just wondering if a lot of this, the extra money is salaries for the, you know, I don't know.
Right. Well, I'm thinking salary, and I'm thinking inflation. I mean, there's a lot that's got to go into that.
Yeah.
I suppose, but I don't know. Going from 90 million to 200 and some million for the Toy Story movies.
The original one?
We're talking about Toy Story 2.
60.
No, but what year was it?
Oh, 95.
So I'm talking about over a decade ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first Kung Fu Panda was 130 million.
Mm-hmm. Which was only like, what,
2008.
Oh, it's been that long?
Yeah.
Yep.
Holy crap.
And the recent Kung Fu Panda, 150 million.
Yeah, so not that much for adding 3D if that's the big cost.
Yeah. No. It just seems weird to me.
No.
I think production values that they're going to have good movies. I don't think they're going to have three.
Well, it sounds like they're planning on, you know, not spending a whole lot of money in making it and then making a whole lot of money in merchandising. So
merchandising. Do we have Space Love on here somewhere, by the way?
We'll see if it's if it's going to be a quality movie or not is the whole question.
Exactly.
You know what? Just for giggles, I know we're doing a lot of this, but I'm just curious. Let's go offshoot real quick to Gnomeo and Juliet.
Oh.
On a random. They don't have it on here. Mm-hmm. They don't have the total cost on this one. I was gonna say $25 million was what it grossed opening weekend. But they don't have the cost for production on here for that one.
Yep.
Trying to think if there was anything else, and that was
Megamind.
Megamind. Last one, people, we promise. We're just doing research on the fly. Megamind.
130.
Yeah, 130.
So if they can shoot for Megamind quality, if they can get it to 100 million, you know, do some cost reduction.
I have my doubts. We'll see if they look any good. And we'll let you know. But we need to move on.
We do.
This for a really long time.
That's okay.
This is really short.
Yeah, this next story is not really a story per se, but I just wanted to let people know that there are pictures of the Man of Steel set that have been released, but they're not really much to look at.
Smallville.
We can gather from the pictures that maybe there's going to be some sort of battle taking place in a small town, maybe Smallville.
See, based off of the TV show Smallville, I'm actually assuming this is like one of those beginning scenes in the movie where, you know, it's not just Clark coming down that spaceship. There's also, you know, other debris. So there's a meteor shower and it ends up giving damage to the the city. And this is an example of some of the damage. Although I don't think these sets look done at all. So these are probably just built portions. Like this is what we have so far.
Right. Well, I have a feeling that some of, like, you look at that one picture of the building and it looks like it's almost got it's got a hole in it, but it's been covered. I'm guessing that they might green screen some stuff in there somehow. So, like I said, it's not much to look at, but I thought it was interesting that the pictures are starting to leak out of that production since there's a lot of people that are kind of curious about it. Mm-hmm. The next two stories that I got, these are, one I put because we're talking about the movie today, and the other one is sort of a follow-up. First one, Transformers Dark of the Moon posts record IMAX opening. Opened up last weekend, and they've made, and I'm guessing this is just from the IMAX theaters, they generated $23.1 million just in that alone. Now, the domestic take was $14 million. I didn't realize that this was released anywhere except domestically, so it must have been released. Maybe they're talking Canada, or I didn't think there's anything overseas released yet. I could be wrong. Anyway, 146 domestic theaters that played Transformers, they made 88,500 per screen, which doesn't sound like a whole lot.
Ooh. But
the overall gross for the movie so far is $180 million. That was through Monday.
And what's their budget? What was their budget?
It was, I'm on that page.
I'm just trying to see if they
$195 million.
Okay, so they've almost made.
They've grossed 162 to as of July 30. Excuse me, as of July 3rd. Mm. It was opening weekend brought in total of $97 million. On 4,013 screens.
Okay. So comingsoon.net said through Monday, so that was the 4th of July. So that was probably a good big hit there, was $180,650. So they're very close to breaking even. This was just opening weekend. I wouldn't be surprised if there's repeat offenders or additional people will go see the movie in the theaters.
So you know what that means.
Another
number three.
Movie?
Yeah, number four.
When's number four coming out? And then the last item I have on here is just sort of a follow up from what we talked about last week when we talked about the new Ridley Scott movie coming that he's working on, Prometheus. I know we had the big interview with
little off, and they finally have released an official synopsis, although it doesn't really say much. I'll let you guys judge for yourselves. Visionary filmmaker Ridley Scott returns to the genre he helped define, creating an original science fiction epic set in the most dangerous corners of the universe. The film takes a team of scientists and explorers on a thrilling journey that will test their physical and mental limits and strand them on a distant world where they will discover the answers to our most profound questions and to life's ultimate mystery.
42! Anyway. it's still very, very vague. And
yeah, says a whole lot without saying a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, that's your official synopsis of Prometheus. No mention of Alien, but no mention of Alien. So.
Well, it was supposed to be like a... They were doing it in the universe.
In the universe, right.
Before Alien. So, who knows? It's probably just another story inside that universe. So, it may never see an alien.
May not.
Anyways. Time to go into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
Seven. As I like to call it. Seven. Because it's S-E-7-E-N. Yeah. Seven. In any case, Seven. 85% fresh in Rotten Tomatoes, 94% audience. Well-loved movie directed by David Fincher. Starring Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt. I can't speak. Gwyneth Paltrow and Kevin Spacey.
So I was almost going to tell you that you shouldn't credit him until the end of the podcast.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. Well, as I said many times before, if you're listening to this damn thing, you better have seen the movie because we're going to give spoilers anyway. So
yeah,
it's all your fault. Speaking of the listener, if you were spoiled, it's not our fault. In any case, he's a very significant person. I thought these four people needed to be the people listed as starring. So
yeah.
Tough noogies for those who haven't seen it, and you shouldn't be listening to this anyways. watch it. And so, come back.
With the whole Kevin Spacey thing being let out of the bag already, how would you have thought if it was what's his name from REM instead of
Kevin Spacey? Oh yeah, if it had been Michael Stipe.
Yeah,
that was really interesting. I don't know. I guess I've never really seen him act. Although he totally could have been creepy as hell.
Yeah, he could have. I think he could have pulled off the total sort of like solemn, deadpan delivery that Spacey kind of pulls off here.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I thought this is one of the creepiest Kevin Spacey performances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he is just...
I don't know, American Beauty kind of was a little creepy at times.
Well, yeah, but he was more, I don't know, in this movie he just totally was not connected to anything. Do you know? It's just, he was just kind of out there, like what, you know, some, like he definitely played the serial killer role very well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he played an insane person role.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's obsessed with these seven deadly sins, and he probably realized it before he started this whole endeavor that he was committing a deadly sin, and he had envy for all these normal people out there. And I think in all essence, in his mind, he was like, you know what? When he's read all these things about the seven deadly sins, he was like all these type of people should perish. Mm-hmm. You know, they should be punished for their crimes of these seven deadly sins. He realized he had his own, and it's like, well, I shouldn't just, you know, somehow kill myself for committing this sin. I should make sure other people who have committed these other sins also take that into account. And that's where the endeavor really started. Finding that one guy, strapping him to a bed for a year.
Well, yeah. The thing that amazes me the most about Kevin Spacey was the fact that he was cast 2 days before they started filming.
Yeah. He wasn't in contention, really. Yeah.
Well, it's like, I don't know how long it took them before they actually started filming his scenes, you know, because movies are shot all out of order and crazy. And but the fact that it's like, here's 2 days, here, read the script and be back here in 3 days to shoot your first scene or whatever. It's like, holy crap. But that's just a testament to how well he can do his job, really.
Mm-hmm.
What, and I thought another interesting part from trivia that we found was that, you know, that the police chief, Lee Ermey, was supposed to – he originally had auditioned for that part. And he's such a good character actor in so many different things. It would have been interesting to see him in that role too, I suppose, in some ways. But I also found just that the overall the tone of the movie, even though I've watched this many times to this point, I can watch this and every time just enjoy it, even though I know what's going to happen. You know, and it's very rare that I mean, there's a lot of movies that I'll watch over and over again, but this is just one of those movies where I can just completely just kind of fall back into the story again. And you know, and even though I know exactly what's coming, it's just a good, solid movie. And that's one of the things I really like about it. And that's when I realized that we hadn't looked at it, I was like, oh my gosh, we have to look at Seven.
Well, well, we should have a couple other Fincher movies coming up on the list, I believe, because I'm a big fan of his. There's not a whole lot of David Fincher movies that I haven't liked. There's a couple that I wasn't too fond of, but for the most part, I've been down with everything that David Fincher has done. I have to give him kudos for like The Social Network. That was a movie that I fully admit will be like, I didn't want to see that movie. I was like the first one. I'm like, David Fincher's directing a movie about Facebook. What? You know,
yep.
But ended up really liking it. So, there's that. Now, the thing I'm curious about, when you guys, I'm assuming that you probably saw this in the theater, Steven.
Actually did not see it in the theater. No, it was one of those ones where I think everybody had heard so much about it that a bunch of my friends, when we wanted to go see it, that everybody was too creeped out.
Oh, really?
So I ended up seeing it, and I ended up seeing it for the first time on video.
What about you, Jeff?
No, I did not see this in the theaters. I don't know why.
This is one of the few movies that I like. I remember seeing this in the theater. I remember, you know, watching it, being totally into it. I remember jumping out of my seat at least twice in the movie. The first time would have been when they found Sloth. And wake Sloth up.
Yeah.
And then the second time was when he pulls the gun on them while they're sitting outside his apartment door.
Yeah.
And he fires the gun. Because, I mean, everybody in that movie theater was dead silent. And there's a good 5 or 6 seconds of complete silence in that movie where they're just looking at each other. And then all of a sudden it's just bam, like, you don't really see him pull the gun. You see him move, but you don't know what he's doing. And it was so loud in that theater that I literally jumped out of my seat. And that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
But I totally remember that. And I go back to it every time I think about watching this movie. I just remember there being a huge buzz about this film, word of mouth wise. The trailer, I wasn't so impressed with the trailer. I went back and rewatched the trailer actually again. And I don't remember being like, that was a movie, oh, I gotta see it. And then watching it again, I was like, the trailer is okay, but I don't think it's something that would have pulled me in to completely see the film.
Yeah, I think what brought me to see it initially was the word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think this was one. I mean, this is one that I would have loved to have gone to see. But like I said, I just remember it being something that, you know, friends of mine and stuff, we didn't pull together to see it. But I remember everybody talking about it. Did you see it? And nobody would really give it away.
Oh, right.
At that time. You know, and what it was all about. And I just remember I just remember the first time I did rent it and saw it, I was just like, oh my God, this is such a good movie.
I just realized why I probably didn't see this in the theater. It was 1995. I was only 15 or 14. Old men.
Shut up.
That would be the reason why I didn't have that much. I remember seeing the commercials and, you know, the trailers and stuff like that, but I didn't see it until later on, probably about 5 years later or something like that. But I have seen this before. It was just such a long time that I totally forgot what the ending was.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was such a long time. So
yeah.
Fortunately, I decided to drop by my local Target, pick up a $5 copy of the movie.
Sweet. And, yeah, it's totally worth it. Totally worth it for $5.
Well, it would, you know, honestly, a $20 version of this would be totally worth it in my humble opinion. Yeah.
I don't have the DVD of it. I really should get it because I would love to hear the commentary or see any features on it anything, because it would be interesting.
Speaking of commentary, and I was surprised I didn't see it in the trivia, although. I could be wrong. I could be misremembering this somewhere, but I remember either hearing it or reading it or something about the film. They were talking about the scene where the first victim is on the slab at the in the morgue.
Mm-hmm.
That somebody told me that a lot of that body is prosthetic. It's all fake.
Right. Well, the first corpse is actually one of the writers, I think it was.
Right. So the one thing that I remember them saying, and it just made me laugh, was that because most of him is prosthetic on that table, that they decided to give him a big wang, bigger wang, because they're like, the poor guy is dead and he's huge, and they're like, we got to do something for him. So they
at least give him a nice big cock.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
It cracks me up every time I see that scene. I'm like, hilarious.
And we talk about Wang later in this show, too, I think. Anyways.
Oh, boy. Well, I think just also, too, I was thinking about this is as I watched this time around, I was actually thinking, I wonder if this was any kind of influence on the folks who did the Saw series at all, because so much of this makes me think of that, because especially the scenes where he had someone kill somebody else.
Right.
Like in Lust.
There are certain things tone wise that are very similar.
Yeah.
In the film, but
he's trying to help them. Or not help them, but trying to get them to come to the terms of their sin.
Or it's more looking at, because she's so pretty, it makes other men laugh or lust after her. Mm-hmm. So she's actually the cause of the sin. It's not everybody else is just innocent.
Mm-hmm.
But to kind of punish those people who are actually experiencing the lust, gives him a strap on, and the rest is
the way. Mm-hmm. Now, were there any, before we get to the end, because I think that's probably the best part to talk about reactions and everything, but when it came to the movie, was there anything that you thought was particularly interesting or unique about it?
Well, it's not unique, but I thought it was interesting how they tried their hardest to not specify their location.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Just the city.
It's the city. There's nothing specific to tell you. I think it's inferred that it's supposed to be New York, kind of. Yeah. But nowhere in the movie, and I specifically paid attention to this while I was watching it, to see if there was anything that gave it away that they were in a particular city or not, and there's really nothing.
They just kept saying the subway, so you knew it had to be somewhere that had a subway.
Right.
Yeah. And it could just be a fictional. Yes, it's supposed to be New York, in all honesty. But one of the big things here is it could be anywhere USA is, just it's a big city, and I kind of like that in movies where they really don't, it doesn't take place in any specific city, mm-hmm. which causes the some movies to have to make sure that they get some sort of landmark in there to define it, that this could be anywhere. Like it could, this could have been in taken place in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know, so it, there's all these differences that could happen or in some different, it could be maybe even Dallas. No, I think there might've been a port or something like that. But being that ambiguous, I think helps to just frame this as
it could be. It could be in your city. Yeah, it could be in your city. Yeah. But I thought that was an interesting use. I also found it very intriguing that when Spacey's character, you know, actually had when John Doe had Mills cornered in that alley.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I found it really interesting that he didn't kill him. I mean, I know, clearly, you know, but I just mean with all of that going on, and you know, it was one of those things that clearly he was toying with him. Clearly, he was trying to lead him. You know, I thought all that was kind of interesting.
Well, in some sense, it also was a very much of a character a sequence to it. I mean, it's not a scripted thing where it's like Kevin Spacey's. John Doe has a gun to this guy's head. It's like, I can escape this guy. I can go out. But then he has this is an everyday guy. I wish I could be like this guy. And he feels this envy for him.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's like, envy. No, not yet. It's not part of the plan.
Yeah.
And he has to go through this, his own personal struggle of, kill him now and help get away from these people, or you know, just run away and get away, have them continue to chase, and then live to fight another day. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It definitely was interesting points. Well, okay, let's talk about the end. Bum bum bum. The very first time you saw it,
mm-hmm.
What was your reaction to the ending?
This was like the second time I first saw this.
Yeah, my reaction pretty much, and I've said this before, anytime a movie does something I don't expect it to do, which for most Hollywood movies is have a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
When this movie went down the path that it did, I was just like, yes, that is awesome.
Yeah.
Because it does, it did something that most of the audience is like, oh my God, no, that, you know, like people are like, no, that's not her head. Or you know what I mean? Like, that's not her in the box. They expect Gwyneth Paltrow to come running out somewhere, you know. You never do, you know, because there's a lot of people that are like, you don't know that it was her. There's no, you know, they never showed her, you know, in their head. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's pretty strongly implied that it's her in the box. Mm-hmm. They do nothing to lead me to doubt otherwise. Why would what's-his-name be freaking out so much? But yeah, I my reaction was just like, oh my God, that was amazing, pretty much, at the end.
Yeah.
I think, as I said, this is like the second first time, because I don't remember the end from the last time I saw it.
Oh, so, God, how could you not? I know.
I don't know. Maybe I didn't actually fully see the movie or something and just thought I saw it or something like that. But so I'm here watching this scene and I'm like, Morgan Freeman's
opens the box.
It opens the box, looks at it, but he's you know, trying to talk him down, Mills down, and it's like you want them to win, the two of them to win, because this is actually a tragedy movie.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody loses. So it's like, all right, we've got these two ones. So they've got all of the different types of sins, and they've got the two left, envy and wrath. All right. So we're going to... So the wrath is going to be Brad Pitt putting his wrath on the guy who's envious of him after he's killed out his wife. And there's this really strong moment where you're rooting for Brad Pitt to do the right thing, to drop the weapon or put it away or something and say, you are not going to beat me.
Yeah. And that was an amazing.
You to jail forever and you will live, which is not what you want to do. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, and that was an amazing scene. That was an amazing scene. I mean, Brad Pitt's acting ability really came through.
All of them.
That scene.
Well, even the alternate ending that they scripted and storyboarded that they didn't actually shoot, I thought would have been decent. Which was they would have basically what would happen is Somerset would have shot him.
Yeah.
So that basically because that gives Somerset his out.
Right, because he was on his way out anyway. Right.
Right, and then that means he saves, you know, Brad Pitt from going to jail, and it wouldn't give what's his name his victory, John Doe his victory.
Right.
Because he wasn't killed out of wrath.
It was wrath because I think Somerset had some sort of connection. Not as loving a connection as Mills did, but he had a connection. He thought she was a great lady. I mean, she confided into him that she was pregnant, and
yeah,
and you know, in some sense, it would have been wrath, but. In comparison, Somerset would have done one shot, boom, dead, right? But Mills, on the other hand, is so full of rage.
Yeah, he did shoot.
Over and over again. Basically, shot him more than enough times. Mm, so yeah. I think that was one way of showing wrath. Well, if he was just shot once, not necessarily wrath, although it was kind of wrath, but it's, The thing that would have really gotten John Doe's, you know, basically satisfied John Doe is if he felt the wrath of angry husband and just
I just found it to be when I first saw it, you know, of course, you know, you got to see all the other murders, like what the scenes looked like. So, of course, you know, when they're doing it, you know, initially you want to see for sure what happened. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think some of the creepier part of the whole thing is the fact that this is the only one you don't see.
Right.
You know, was Gwyneth Paltrow. You don't see her body.
Yeah, but she wasn't also killed as one of these.
Right. And that's what I think was an interesting thing. I think. Yeah. And that's what I was getting at. It was like she was kind of killed for the purpose of the sins. She wasn't killed as one of the sins.
I think you could say that, and it was, because, you know, it's one of those things like you want something that you can't have, so you...
Yeah, he coveted something
right
that was not... Yeah, his envy was what killed her.
Right.
I guess, you know, so... But I thought it was interesting because she wasn't... You know, that scene wasn't discussed, but I do think that you just saw how evil Spacey's character was, or how oblivious Spacey's character was when they're talking and you know, and he's like, "I just went to go see your wife. She struggled. She struggled. She didn't want me to kill her because of her unborn baby." And then, you know, and then he gets hit and he's like, "Oh, you didn't know." Right. You know what I mean? Like he was digging anything he could do.
Yeah. And he was just the way he said that. It was just so deadpanned. And I'm a psychopath.
Yeah. It's just like digging no matter what, you know. And then Brad Pitt's character struggles for that. Just whole scene is just heart-wrenching.
Oh yeah.
You know. So
before we get there to that scene though, like yes, the ending was to me was amazing, but the spot in the movie where I kind of was like, wow, this movie's doing some crazy things was when he showed up at the police station. I'm like, our main antagonist
just
turned himself in. Like, where's this movie going? Like, you know, that was something that I completely didn't expect to happen. It was like, all right, I don't get it. What's, you know? And then when it sort of all unfolds, it's like, wow, that's pretty amazing. Like, so.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a movie not to miss. Like, if you haven't seen it, you've got to see it. And, you know, it's got so many twists and turns. And you can clearly tell, you know, Brad Pitt is kind of the rookie detective and Morgan Freeman is the old guard, you know, and
right.
You know, and you just, you get, you, it takes you on so many emotional levels, this movie does. And I think that it's just a really good, good, solid film and one that needs to be seen.
Right.
and stands up very well to the test of time.
Yeah, there's nothing really. Well, maybe the computers in the crime lab, those might date it a little bit, but but other than that, yeah, there's no real.
Still, I mean, they did the zoom in enhance sort of thing even on those old monitors. So one of my favorite little pieces of trivia, and I suppose it's not that great, but I like it, is it's raining every day in the movie except for the last day. The reason is less about thematic issues and more about continuity. It rained in the first day that Brad Pitt filmed, so he kept going until they were rushing to do all Pitt scenes before he left to go make 12 Monkeys, which is also another amazing movie that Brad Pitt did. With that, what have we learned? We have learned when you want someone dead, you drive by and shoot them. No matter how emotional you get, you need to keep focus on the details. Just because you have a library card doesn't make you Yoda. Apathy is not a virtue, only a solution. Love costs. Take work and effort. Takes work and effort. I said that wrong. Anyway. Last but not least, the world is a fine place and worth fighting for. I agree with the second part. That is what we've learned from Seven N. Classic thriller. Classic thriller. I'm glad to have it in my DVD collection.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it's an awesome film. It's got an awesome ending, and if you haven't seen it, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Too bad. I don't care how squeamish you are, feed the damn thing.
Yeah, just generally, it's an amazing film. I'm glad I took the time to watch it again, and you know, I was just as into it as I was the first time I'd seen it. So, I think that that's one of the best parts about it.
Yay! And that one thing we forgot, we were going to do something about summer blockbusters, but we're going to skip that this week and move on into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
Time for Transformers Dark Side of the Moon. I mean, Dark of the Moon. I hate that.
Dark Side.
And Wang even said Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
37% rotten by the critics, but 90% for the audience. I can see why. Directed by Michael Bay. That explains why. Starring Shia LaBeouf. That explains why. Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, Josh Duhamel, John Turturro, Therese Gibson, Buzz Aldrin, Francis McDormand.
Don't you know? McDormand, don't you know?
My favorite's on here, Peter Cullen. Hugo Weaving and Leonard Nimoy. I didn't realize Leonard Nimoy was voicing in this film for some strange reason. I don't know why. But I figured it out right away when I heard his voice. But I was like, oh hey, check that out, it's Spock.
Mm-hmm.
But that was nice.
Not his first Transformers voicing, by the way.
Oh no,
exactly.
They did Transformers left and right, like. Even during the original cartoon in the 80s. So.
Yeah, he was in the original Transformers movie, the animated one.
Now, what did he do in that one?
Galvatron.
He was
Galvatron.
So, Unicron was Orson Welles, and that was the last picture that Orson Welles did.
Correct. That was an accident. I did not mean to say that.
But it was close enough because Unicron made Megatron into Galvatron, so understandable. That's all I'll say about that. So where were we? Let's talk about our Transformers experiences in general before we actually get into this movie. Original Transformers, like the cartoons, like non-Japanese, you know, American cartoon Hasbro trying to sell a whole bunch of Transformer toys.
Mm-hmm.
Were you into the Transformers to begin with?
Oh yes. Look who you're talking to.
Look who you're talking to. I was totally into the Transformers. It was my favorite thing. I had the Power Master Optimus Prime. I had the big city thing, which I forgot what the name of it is.
Yes, but I'm one of the people who is actually into the car part of them as much as the robot part of them.
Oh, good point. Got me there.
Yeah, I wasn't so much into the car part of them, but I was thoroughly into the Transformers themselves. Mm-hmm. Had everything that I could get my hands on Transformers and all of the, you know, and I was a Transformers purist because, like, GoBots did not exist for me.
The Kmart of Transformers?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
People get mentioned like, GoBots, and I'm like, what? Wait, wait a minute. They had a cartoon?
Yeah, they did.
Because I remember seeing toys of the GoBots, but, mm-hmm. you know, all of my focus has been completely on Transformers. Transformers, the movie 1985, which, you know what, we really should actually review as one of our past movies. We really need to. I mean, I swear I cried when Optimus Prime died in that movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I just remember Bumblebee saying, or I just remember when they're in the episode where they're like, oh shit, Bumblebee. And I was like, oh, when Spike
swore.
Like,
yep.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God.
They didn't do that on the TV show.
No.
You got the touch. You got the power. Yeah. Actually, the one great thing about seeing movies at the Alamo Drafthouse is in front of any Transformers movie, they're playing clips of the original Transformers television show, and the
Bush baby.
So yeah, I even got a little segment with where they were doing a thing where the whoever sings "I've Got the Touch" was like singing into, was like they had shots of him recording it, and of course it doesn't have any of the other music around it. He goes, "I got the touch," and it's like, wait a minute. That actually sounded good in the final product because that was absolutely horrid.
Yes, it's, I mean, Stan Bush, just so you know.
Yeah. So, but in any case, so Transformers were all huge fans. Mm-hmm. 2007, Michael Bay puts out his first Transformers movies. What did you think?
I was good with the first one.
Yeah, the first one, I was so happy that they had made a Transformers movie. I was willing to forgive its flaws. So yeah. I was just kind of like, yay, Transformers, you know.
Now,
I didn't like the transformations.
Really?
So much. I didn't, because it was just me. It was just me. I mean, I'm so used to, like, you know, the way that you kind of got it in the series and stuff like that, that I thought that some of the robots were just completely unrecognizable. You know, in their robot form. And I missed some of the pure things. Like, although I understand the whole issue with, you know, VW and all that stuff, but, you know, I missed Bumblebee as not the, you know, as not the VW bug. You know, I mean, I there were certain things that I was just like, oh, I mean, I get it. I mean, and they explained
why.
You're
being the purist, being like, yeah. The Bumblebee with the VW bug in the movie, and even though they had a VW bug next to him when he was in the car lot, they turned had him as a VW bug instead. you know, I actually thought it was cooler that he was a Camaro, but that's just me. But I can understand. I could easily understand the conventions that they were going for. And the one thing I really liked about that original movie, one of my favorite parts, was when one of the I think it was the helicopter right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The helicopter was transforming for the first time. They were doing the regular sounds, but then they threw in there just a little bit from like the original cartoon. And I'm like, yeah, score!
Yeah.
And I mean, the way they had the transformations, and I understood all the conventions as to why they were doing what they were doing when it comes to what vehicles they were. You know, that didn't bug me at all, was the actual vehicle, what the vehicles they were. I mean, Megatron not being just a handgun was fine by me. I would totally understand that. The way they did it, I think they executed it right. It's like, we're trying to make this at least somewhat realistic. And I don't know about you, but the way that the Transformers transformed into cartoons, which is, no, there's no way that would work. And the way they have it in the movies was just much more authentic. And I'm just glad they were able to get that animated sound into the movie so that you kind of have that throwback to the original cartoon.
I had three major problems with the first movie. First one being, I agree with Steven, I really didn't like the look of the robot forms of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know I had heard Michael Bay talk about, like, they had decided to go the direction they went because they wanted something that looked alien, like that it wasn't from here when they were in the robot form. But my main problem is I have, you know, other than Optimus Prime and Bumblebee, sometimes I have a really hard time telling apart
who is everybody who's. Else looked the same. Especially all the Decepticons look exactly alike.
Right.
You know, and those were my issues with it. But, I mean, the story itself didn't bother me so much, although I'm not a Shia person and all that stuff. Yeah,
I kind of get – the other thing that I really hated about the first one was sort of like the forced comedy. Like, everything had to be funny. Like, anytime that the people were on screen, especially when you were first meeting Shia and his family, it was like all this like sort of heavy-handed attempts at humor, and it like, just didn't go over well for me.
Well, and also, like, honestly, I don't think that Optimus Prime and the rest of the Autobots, when trying to keep a low profile, would have, in the middle of this little neighborhood, transform into their full robot forms and go walking around different yards where they knew that their footprints would have an effect on the ground. And they would be making all those noise.
To be honest, that scene, I have no problem with that scene.
Really? Okay, you're kidding me.
No, I am fine with that scene.
That's the scene I have a problem with.
No, I'm talking about the humans, the people. Anytime it's like there's like these forced sort of awkward jokes constantly, and it drove me nuts. But
that continues with like pretty much most of the humans
franchise.
Yeah, the humans in all three of these films have been the joke, you know, where the only thing serious.
Yeah,
which is the problem with the movies is they've been the jokes. They're the comic relief.
They're the fodder,
right? And they've been the focus. It's all about the humans and how they interact with these alien Autobots and Decepticons, I think was the main problem. The movie is called Freaking Transformers. The story should be about the Transformers. And honestly, in this movie, in Dark of the Moon, they do a lot better. I'm not saying it's necessarily great, but they do a lot better. There's a lot more interaction when it comes to the Transformers themselves.
Well,
but they execute it.
Well, my final thing that I really hated about both 1 and 2, and not so much 3 because I think they worked hard to sort of remedy it, was the action scenes in the first two movies were cut so crazily that it was so hard to tell what the hell was going on. And
very
I didn't know
Cloverfield. It was very Cloverfield.
I didn't know if that was an attempt to, like, we don't have to spend a whole lot of money on doing details in the animation and CG for the bots because you won't be able to see what the hell it is they're doing anyway.
Where they did fix it in 3.
In this movie, there's a ton of slow shots when fighting is going on. Just like, let's slow everything down and take our time, and you guys can sit here and enjoy what's happening. You know, it's not this like forced, frantic camera movement all over the place. You know, which I thought was kind of interesting that they decided to go that direction.
I'm with you 100%. I enjoyed this movie much more than I did the 1 or 2, especially 2. Because 2, just two. The plot was horrible and just, I was just waiting for something to be better.
To me, 2, I fell asleep during 2. I mean, I was just like not into it at all. So I would say that this one kept my interest a little more. However, I thought it was way too long. I think they could have trimmed a good 30 minutes off of this movie, especially the whole probably first 30 minutes with Shia. Like, I didn't feel that that was really important. I don't really care about his job hunt. And
yeah,
it's just that all seems sort of tacked on for some reason. And
they had to be able to establish why Mom was there, how he found Carly, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, they could have done most of that exposition in a quick little comment at one point. They could have started him just starting at whatever that place was called, Accelerate or something like that.
Oh, with John Malkovich being all creepy?
Yeah. I mean, they could have just started with him just, you know, just starting on that and him starting this job and he's got this girlfriend and at this – yeah, this is how we got together, you know, little exposition comment, which takes about all of, what, 5-10 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, I thought the whole scene with him and the Japanese guy was just – I don't know. I think it could have been handled better. And did anybody else think it was just strange that McSteamy just happened to be the guy who was working with the Decepticons that happened to be the boss of Shia's girlfriend? Like, it's like, really? Like, the one person on the whole planet that's organized and working with the bad guys happens to be his girlfriend's boss.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I mean, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, of
course,
yeah.
Of course, the car she gives him ends up being Soundwave. What do you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely planted, you know, for sure. But speaking of characters, what did y'all think of the long-awaited appearance of Shockwave?
Well, he was. He was momentarily in Revenge of the Fallen because he was a satellite.
I thought that was Soundwave was a satellite in Fallen.
Oh, Shockwave.
Yeah, Shockwave. Because remember, that was the one that...
Shockwave and Soundwave were so close together. Yeah. I have my problems with Shockwave in this movie, but, you know, I accept him for what he is and just kind of like... Basically, when I went to see this movie, I turned my brain off. I didn't think about it. That previously happened was not trying to compare it to anything, just trying to enjoy the movie. Because you know what? When I went into this movie, I wasn't expecting a good movie. I was expecting a spectacle fest. Yeah. I was expecting to see very shiny things and explosions happening and go, ooh, shiny. That's all I was expecting in this movie, which is probably the reason why I really enjoyed this movie. Was because I was not expecting deep characters. I was not expecting a great plot. I was not expecting anything like that. I was expecting the Michael Bay experience of he blows shit up. Mm-hmm. And it looks cool. That's it.
I think out of all the Decepticons, I think Shockwave, he is the one that has sort of... He seemed more like an homage to his original... form.
I agree with that.
Like, out of all the Decepticons, he was the one who's like, okay, it's like Shockwave, it just sort of evolved for the movie. Like, it's not kind of like Optimus Prime. Optimus Prime is very close to his, you know, cartoon
iconic self. Yeah, his iconic look. Yeah,
right.
So I would agree with that.
As far as in the story, I mean, I had no problem with him. Other than I didn't really get the whole crazy worm thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was weird. All about.
Yeah, I don't understand where that came from. That just kind of came out of nowhere. Because that's not in any history.
Obviously,
unless it's something in the comics. Unless it's something in the comics.
No. Here. Michael Bay conceived the driller's destruction of the skyscraper doing stomach crunch exercises. So his endorphins while he's exercising make him think of some crazy shit.
No, but I agree with you that concept was odd. I mean, so was the whole thing of bringing Cybertron into the orbit of the Earth. You know, that was a whole weird.
Well, there was actually a lot of the scenes, a lot of things you saw were little pieces that they pulled out of the cartoons.
Right.
that being one of them. That was the space bridge pulling Cybertron into Earth's orbit was one of the plots in the cartoon.
I guess you're right.
Yeah, there was one where they pulled it into orbit. It was causing havoc on Earth, and then the Autobots put an explosion on Cybertron or something, which pushed it out of orbit and away from Earth.
Yeah, the scene where he rips Abraham Lincoln out of the memorial and sits there, that's from the cartoon.
Yeah, I remember that.
So there's awesome. a lot of little things that they sort of yanked out of that, which I appreciated those things. You know, it was nice to sort of see them doing things to pay homage to the original, and that all the Transformers geeks would probably catch on to long before anybody else did. I could appreciate that.
I definitely did. I did miss since they brought in Soundwave and they brought in Laserbeak. I have to say that I did miss there being a connection between the two of them.
With the big cassettes and ejection.
Yeah, I don't care if it's. It didn't have to be. I mean, I realize that cassettes are out of date and blah blah and all that kind of stuff. It didn't have to be that so much, but that he's a part of him or something, and that when he, he could, he could see what Laserbeak sees, or he could, when Laserbeak came back, that he became a part of him or something. There was something. There if there had been some connection there.
The first time I saw Laserbeak, I was like, Laserbeak, yeah! I mean, again, this movie, I was all about, just getting excited for the stupidest shit ever. Just seeing these things. Laserbeak, oh yeah, Soundwave! Oh, he said, awesome BMW! Awesome! and just be like, not really caring about anything before, just being these thrilled by the visuals, the spectacle. This is a spectacle fest movie.
Well, speaking of spectacle fest, did you see it in 3D?
Yes.
I did as well.
Because it was filmed in 3D, for one thing. Michael Bay absolutely refused. He's like, there is no way in hell you are going to do a post-produced 3D of any of my movies. He didn't want to do 3D to begin with because he thought that the 3D cameras were a little cumbersome. He felt like he hadn't worked with them, so it would just be trying to learn something new. And from my understanding, he worked a little bit with James Cameron when it came to this. So he shot it in 3D, and I honestly have to say, this was Avatar type 3D. This really was Avatar type 3D to me. It's one of those things where the 3D kind of, you didn't notice it, but for some reason, I really felt that if it wasn't there, I would, if that makes any sense. I really felt that, when he was shooting this in 3D, he was absolutely attempting to film this in 3D and actually made an effort to do it, to make it look
good. To do things that would look good in 3D.
Right.
Agreed with that. Especially like the skydivers and the, some of the depth and stuff. He clearly was filming it for his 3D.
Yeah.
He didn't just do gimmicks. He didn't do a gimmicky 3D movie.
You know what? This would be one of the best movies to do a gimmicky 3D movie in. This kind of would have been a little bit more fun if he did a few gimmicks, like a Optimus Prime reaching through the screen or something like that. I think that would have been really cool. But it really felt more like a window into a 3D world, which is really how 3D needs to be shot. So this is just more proof that 3D can work. You just need to do it right.
It doesn't have to be a hatchet coming at you or an arrow coming at you or blood spattering from somebody's head.
Yeah,
it doesn't
have to be fun.
Yeah.
Which can be fun. So don't get us wrong. Occasional one of those. That's fine. But it's like looking at a 3DS would probably be my best way of saying it. Because when you look at a 3DS when it's in its full 3D mode, it's more like looking into a 3D world instead of having it come out at you. It's looking into it.
It's looking at a ViewMaster.
Yeah.
Versus, if you even know what a ViewMaster is.
Enough 3D analogies.
No,
yeah,
but
I know what a 3D ViewMaster is. I will say that I'm not that well. Yeah, I'm not that young. But 3D analogies. But yes, the 3D in this I think is a movie that's worth seeing in 3D. Mm-hmm. I will recommend it. I will actually recommend saying, hey, if you can see in 3D, go see it in 3D. If you can't see 3D like Tim, don't go see it in 3D. It's just not worth paying 3D prices if you can't even see it in 3D. So,
yeah. Well, speaking of 3D, kidding. What'd you think of Rosie? She's been getting iced by the critics. Her performance, because she was in the movie a lot, mm-hmm. for being that character. Carly was in the movie a hell of a lot, and she even had some interactions with the Transformers and, you know, big things. And I was kind of surprised. I didn't see her act particularly well, but I didn't think anybody particularly acted very well in this movie.
We're gonna segue into something. Well, I was gonna save this for the end, but
oh, okay.
Here's my main issue with this movie is the fact that anytime that there were people on the screen instead of robots, I hated it. the people in this movie, the characters in this movie, are all over the top, sort of cliched stereotypes. I just found it annoying. Like, you know, they can't just be, I don't know, it just seemed like John Turturro, like his whole character is just so over the top. Like,
yeah,
it just drives me insane.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of, the robots, I don't have a problem with them being kind of over the top. I sort of expect, you know, these giant, huge robots, they can get away with having these humongous sort of over the top personalities. But the humans, I'm like, this movie would be so much better if there weren't any people in it. Like, take all the people out, cut all the scenes with the people out, and I would be much happier.
Yeah, actually, I got I had checked into this on Miso, and I got a comment on Facebook from my one of my WoW guild leaders saying, plug your ears when humans speak.
Well, that's the one of the things, like, you talked, you know, put a thing on here about the two annoying robots, like the two little ones. I actually did not find them as annoying as the twins from number two, mainly because the racism is, like, toned down in this one. They weren't just bad racial stereotypes.
And Wheelie was in the previous movie. Brains wasn't, but Wheelie was in the first. Was in the last one, and they basically just continued that character. And I didn't see any difference between Wheelie and the Wheelie in 2 and the Wheelie in 3. So,
But I just remembered us when we were looking back at this movie before. Mm-hmm. If you listen back to where we were and in several places, we were excited about Shockwave, and we were excited about knowing that Michael Bay had said the twins were not in this movie, and that, you know, there would be no more, you know, annoying robot characters or whatever, I think were his words or something. But then, like, immediately, like within the first 10 minutes of the movie, you've got these two that are like in her, you know,
underwear drawer
and stuff, and I'm like, oh god. You know, I was just like, really? I mean, so I think they turned me off. Beginning, I didn't see the redeeming value of them.
It's funny that the two little ones in this one I actually found somewhat entertaining. Like, they weren't my favorite by far, but nowhere near did I find them as grating as the twins from number two. The twins,
fair enough.
Yeah,
I was totally fine with William Brains in this movie. They were just kind of the two little Autobots that, you know, just kind of got in the way. They made their little comments. They're the ones that actually hung out with Sam. Because
I thought it was cute how they sort of interacted together. Like they were like the married couple of the Autobots. Like, you know what I mean? They're always talking about how they're like, we're together, or we're the two that everybody hates, or that I kind of liked, you know. We're the two redheaded stepchildren of the Transformers that nobody likes.
True. Man. Okay, I'll take that.
But yeah, I didn't think any of them. They had the Wrecker twins as well, so they had some sort of twins in here. But those guys definitely were not at all annoying, comparatively speaking. I could somehow see some people kind of seeing those guys as annoying, but they were just more of hardcore warriors than anything. That were just a little crazy. That's why they just stuck to the launch pad.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I don't think there were two annoying bots.
Okay.
So, but that was just me. So, what did we learn from this movie? We have learned Mike Ryan is hot. Oh, wait, that's a reference to the previous two movies.
Mark Ryan
did the voice of Bumblebee in the first movie. He did on-set voices. I actually think he did on-set voices for this one, but he never was actually cast as an official voice. And he also did the voice of Jetfire in Revenge of the Fallen.
I just find it funny that somebody could be the quote-unquote voice of a character that doesn't have a voice. Like,
remember in the first Transformers movie, there was like that like one or two lines that Bumblebee had where his vocal circuits were fixed or something for a short period of time, saying, "I want to stay with boy."
Mm-hmm.
So he did have a voice for that. But the big one he had was in Revenge of the Fallen as the voice of Jetfire.
Mm-hmm.
And he also did on-set voices, so he wasn't the actual official voice necessarily for some people, but he was there on set. And if you go to imdb.com and search him on there, him in his goateed look is anyway,
Jeff, easy.
According to Steven, Michael Bay lied about not having annoying bots in the movie again. See, 3D can be good if you try properly. Yeah. Again, another me thing. Peter Cullen's voice is orgasmic. Love you, Optimus Prime. The warrior's path is a solitary one. Russian is like all buttons on a calculator you never push. And the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one.
Yeah, we didn't really learn that from this movie as much as it was reinforced in this movie.
Yes. So what I agree on this movie is this is total eye in ear candy extravaganza. That's it. That's what it is. I'm not saying it's a great movie or anything, but see it in 3D, dude. Seriously. Although if you can't, although 2D be fine if you can't see 3D anyways. But I really think it's worth seeing in the theater for just the audio and eye candy, not because it's necessarily that great of a movie. I would still give it like a 4 stars though, just for enjoyability.
Hmm.
But again, I like Wing Commander, so.
This movie to me might be well, I won't say that the movie's horrible. It's passable, but it might be good if there were no people in it. I really, 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 really got annoyed by all the human actors in this movie. I did enjoy watching Chicago burn though. That's cathartic.
The destruction of Chicago. But, you
know, I was diverted and caused a whole lot of grief by having to go around Michigan Avenue and all the places where they were shooting all the time. So it's finally good to actually get to see what the hell it was they were doing, you know, inconvenience me. So at least I know they weren't just sitting on their asses.
Good point. I enjoyed it. The actors weren't exactly great, but the action was. See it in 3D.
We have a consensus here that this was not a great movie, but it's a must-see movie, and see it in 3D. Am I getting that right across the board?
I don't know if I would call it a must-see. But
I really think you should see it. People should see it in the theaters in 3D. just for the spectacle of it. Go do a matinee or something, but I think it's worth it, worth seeing. Mm-hmm. In any case, let's head on into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
In the future, we're talking about Straw Dogs, starring James Marsden, Kate Bosworth, and Alexander Skarsgård. It's a remake of the Sam Peckinpah movie of 1971 film of the same name, in turn based on the Gordon Williams novel The Siege of Treacher's Farm. Treacher's Farm.
So first thing, has anybody seen the original?
Nope. I have not.
I've never heard.
But I want to now that I've seen it, but they don't have it on Netflix right now.
Well, they don't have it on
it's
Netflix.
It's not available. It's just not on no, Netflix. It's not available right now. It's on save.
Oh, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. I have my other thing. Yeah, I've never seen the original either, but I did watch the trailer for the original after watching the trailer for this one just to sort of have a comparison. And I guess I could kind of see why they might have remade it, although I don't know. I could see if they were deciding, like, okay, if we're going to do this story again, we have to change the setting and do some... Because right now, if you guys don't, like I said, the first one is set in the English countryside. And I think we would have a hard time buying that they're just like crazy English people attacking Americans.
Right. Okay. It makes sense. I get what you're coming with that. Yeah.
There's so, even a Criterion Collection version of the Straw Dogs. Check that out.
Yes. Yeah, so they had to rewrite it and make it. It looks like they're somewhere rural. I don't know where. Deep South. That's all you need to know. Deep South has crazy people that'll hurt you.
Hey. As someone who hails from the Deep South.
Yeah.
As someone who hails from Texas right now. Yeah, I agree.
But anybody like it has a very it has sort of a falling down vibe to it to me. Sort of like here's the geeky guy who's gonna get pushed around and then he's just sort of going to snap and then go all medieval on their asses.
I can see that.
You know,
I can see that. It also had a very, very much a vibe of The Strangers,
yeah,
which I thought was a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that they were trying to go for a little bit of that tension.
Well, the interesting thing that I saw between the two trailers was in the original they play up much more of the fact of the main character, Dustin Hoffman's character, sort of like transforming into right. this guy who's gonna like kick their ass, mm-hmm. And they don't really emphasize who the bad people are very much or why they're attacking them, whereas in this remake trailer they're like. They sort of hone in on like the fact that, you know, these people are like.
They give you a clue,
yeah. Right? They're coveting, you know. They're getting pissed off at him because they think it's some uppity, you know, city boy who's gonna, you know, who's got this pretty wife who used to be theirs or whatever. Almost got it. Like I'm not sure if Skarsgård is supposed to be like an ex boyfriend of hers, you know. But that's right. The kind of vibe I got from it, you know. So, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if it's a rush out to see for me, but...
Mm-hmm. I just found the trailer... Like I said, I found the trailer to be interesting. I like the this is who he was to this is who he is kind of who he's becoming kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, I mean, clearly they're riding high on the fact that Skarsgård is, you know, in True Blood right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're waiting, you know, they're letting this movie be kind of seen by people at this stage of the game when they just came back from season four
right.
of True Blood. So, you know, I thought it was also interesting to hear him with the Southern accent. He's doing the whole, you know, he's doing the whole, Stackhouse, you know, Jason Stackhouse kind of thing, where he's really, you know, because Skarsgård really has a European accent. Crazy one. So it's really nice to, it was good. His accent wasn't bad in the commercial or in the trailer. So, but I do think it's going to be interesting to see where they go with this, and what the connection's going to end up being with the girlfriend or wife with these guys. I think that's going to be interesting to see where, I think there's got to be some twist. They're clearly not giving it all away. So there has to end up being some kind of crazy, wacky twist, like, that's going to come out of this that we're not expecting.
I could see that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, she's a cult leader and she brought him down there to be, to be, she's going to end up being in on it so that, you know, those guys would kill her and she could inherit the money or something, you know, or there's got to be some kind of connection, some kind of crazy we're not expecting thing.
So it's like a mix of The Strangers and The Wicker Man, like, you know, ulterior motive.
There's got to be something going on. But I'm interested in seeing it. I just think, you know, it has enough of The Strangers vibe that gets me interested in wanting to go see it. And the way the trailer is kind of is a paced out, where they're doing a flashback and they're, you know, some things like that. I'm like, if the movie is going to be like this, I might really kind of think it's cool. So I'm down for seeing it.
Yeah, not so much. It's one of those things where I kind of like see it and get a little bit excited of it, and then as I kind of like afterwards, I'm like, nah, I think I'll pass.
Yeah,
it looks all right, you know, but it could be interesting.
The interesting thing to me about remakes, and this always seems to happen with me, is like if it's something that somebody's like, oh yeah, this is a remake of this movie, I'd be like, oh, I've never seen the original. And I always, in the back of my mind, goes, well, if they're remaking this, somebody must have been, like, a big fan of it, or was, like, you know, somebody watched it and was like, ooh, you know, I think we could redo this movie now and have it be successful. So I've never seen the original, but after watching the trailer of the original, I'm sort of interested in seeing it. I'm not totally sure why somebody wanted to remake this film. So,
yeah.
If anything, this trailer has made me want to watch the original movie.
Right.
You know.
I'd agree with that.
So
I agree with that, because it would be interesting to see where that comes from. But it caught my attention enough is in seeing the trailer at the theater that I wanted us to talk about it for sure. You know, and I think that was the biggest reason that I brought it up.
The funny thing was before you joined the call, Jeff totally had you pegged. He's like, this is totally a Steve movie.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, like,
totally.
I can see why Steve recommended to look at this trailer. This is totally a Steve
movie. It's totally a me movie. I'm totally down with it. I would sit there and be like, I would love to be scared by it. That's why I loved The Strangers, because it was like every corner, you know, different things going on. I was like, you know.
Yeah, loved it. It's like we roll around to Halloween and it's like, this is my time of year.
Steve's month.
Rah.
Maybe I should just like dictate, for the month of October, you pick all the past movies.
Oh, I would have fun with it. I'd find you some obscure ones.
Oh, that would be so.
I think I've already put Freaks on there. Ha.
Yes.
In any case,
supposedly one of the scariest movies of all time.
It's the one movie you get this year.
That's right.
And maybe we should dictate that one month out of every year, one of us will just take all of the movies. Past movies, at least, not the current movies. The current movies will still roll around and everything. But in any case, let's talk about our excitement for this movie. As I said, nah, looks all right. It could be interesting.
Yep. like I said, I've never seen the original, and as funny as it sounds, the trailer for this movie makes me want to watch that movie.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good one, in my opinion, my little opinion, from seeing the trailer. I like, you know, it seems a lot like The Strangers, but with more to it. I'm going to like it. I think I'm going to like it. So I'm down.
So that is our – so from I Think I Might Be Bored, although I might be interested, to mediocre, to this looks awesome, if I'm understanding everything correctly. That is our excitement for Straw Dogs. Coming soon to a CLL Movies podcast near you. Reel number 61, we'll be talking about one movie that, and, you know, in some sense, I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet, and that is Demolition Man. Mm. Talking about the Three Shells and the Taco Bells.
Hey, that we really haven't broken into any of the old Stallone action flicks.
I know. It's like, what's wrong with us? In the present, we're going to be looking at Larry Crown.
Maybe it's because he can't act.
We're going to be talking about Larry Crown. And, you know, I was almost ready to switch Harry Potter to this weekend, but from all my information, even though I keep hearing people about seeing Harry Potter this weekend, it doesn't come out until next weekend. So, Larry Crown in the meantime. Following that up with another David Fincher movie.
Yes.
We were just talking about a David Fincher movie. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, we'll be talking about. The trailer for that. So please let us know what you think of these movies. Do you think Transformers was complete and utter crap? Do you think it was actually really good? Why? What for? What have you? Please go to our blog at COLmovies.com or email us at COLmovies@gmail.com. You can also leave a voicemail at our the COL talk line. That's 361 COLTALK. That's for you who are American or alphabetically challenged on the phone. That's 361-265-8255. Please give us a call. Leave a voicemail. Go see one of these movies. In fact, go see like Larry Crown or even Transformers. Whatever movie you go to, even if it's not something we're talking about. When you go to a movie, you come out, get your friends around, call us, and just let us know what your impressions are. I don't care what the movie is.
Even if it's like, it sucked. You know, we'll take that.
Yeah, seriously. Just say, hey, walked out of Transformers 2 or Transformers 3, and you know what? It sucked ass, man. Or, you know, that was freaking awesome. I don't care. I don't care how stupid the call is. Please leave us a voicemail. We would love to play it on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/COLmovies, which is essentially pulling everything from Facebook. At facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, please jump onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'd very much appreciate that. With that, is there any final thoughts before I close this baby up?
No. I was excited about the movies this week.
Yeah, I thought this was a good week.
Good group.
Yeah. Well, except for the Straw Dogs. Like 7 and
Transformers. I liked all 3. I liked all 3, so I was happy.
Oh, yeah,
it was my week, damn it.
Yeah. It was literally your week. You were the one who picked the damn thing. In any case.
Were you happy to see Chicago burn? Is that all what it was?
it was fun. It was cathartic watching watching Chicago get the crap kicked out of itself.
Right. With that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven. Take a nap.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst of my ever heard. I just stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.